Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. Another big week in politics. Last week, we took a week off to go to the Super Bowl, had a great time there. Now we're back at it with more. We got an incredible panel this week. Travis Allen, Mike Gatto, both recently left the assembly on the Republican side, Democratic side, Deborah Cobalt in the middle. But before we get to that, we want to start with Katie Hill, who's a new member of Congress, who's quickly becoming one of the most high-profile, most talked-about people in all of Congress. Here's our interview. Welcome to The Issue Is. I'm Alex Michelson. We're just days away from another potential government shutdown.
Barriers in and of themselves in certain places where it makes sense, I don't have a problem with. But I do
think freshman Congresswoman Katie Hill is with us. What she sees as a potential compromise and what that means for a border wall. Plus, what President Trump told Katie Hill just moments before the State of the Union that left her practically speechless. Back here in California, Governor Gavin Newsom is in charge. There are Democratic supermajorities in both houses. So where do Republicans go from here? Can they actually win in this state? Here to discuss and debate these matters and more, our panel of pundits, GOP party chairman hopeful Travis Allen, popular podcaster Deborah Cobalt, and Democratic former Assemblyman Mike Gatto. The Issue Is starts right now. And welcome to The Issue Is. I'm Alex Michelson. Our guest tonight has become one of the most influential young members of Congress. Katie Hill represents Simi Valley, Santa Clarita, Lancaster, Palmdale, and everything in between. Congresswoman Katie Hill, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thanks so much for having me, Alex.
So we covered you when you were before you ran for Congress. We covered you during the campaign. We covered you during the transition.
True.
And now we're covering you as a member of Congress. What's the biggest surprise of actually being there as a member of Congress?
You know, I think the biggest difference is, gosh, that's a good question. Well, it's like everything is on steroids, right? I mean, the campaign felt like it was increasingly busy and crazy, and the responsibility was greater and greater, and now you just take that up to a whole different level.
Perhaps the craziest moment yet was the State of the Union. You were a member of what's called the Welcoming Committee, which means that you were among the people to walk in with the president. You had a chance to talk to him. What did you say to him?
So it's funny because I saw him when I wasn't really expecting it. He looked at me and I shook his hand and I said, "Hi, I'm Katie Hill from California." And he's like, "Oh, I know who you are. I've been watching." I was like, "Oh," and he's like, "You're doing good." And I just didn't really know what to say to that. And then I took my picture with him, shook his hand, and he's like, "Keep up the good work." And I'm like, "Thanks." So that was pretty much the extent of the conversation.
Later than that, you walked into the chamber, listened to the speech itself. Let's talk about the speech itself. Some say it was unifying, the best speech that he has given so far.
Well, I think if you just took the beginning and the end, that's true. But I think there was a lot in the middle that's not true for. The part that I think was the most concerning to me was when he said that, you know, investigations are what are keeping us from making real progress. And I just fundamentally don't believe that to be true. I think there was a lot of insulting stuff said around immigrants and, you know, a number of other populations. And I just feel like we've got a lot of work ahead of us still.
And speaking of investigations, you're now part of the House Oversight Committee, which is leading the investigations of the president. Do you feel like the president's language was a direct threat to your committee?
To be honest, I would see it more as a threat as an American citizen. Those investigations, that transparency that we're asking for, this is about uncovering the truth and making sure that we're holding our leaders to the exact same standards we hold ourselves to. And it shouldn't be that hard. If you've got nothing to hide, then this should be easy.
Perhaps the most unifying moment was when he recognized all the women in the room wearing white, you among them, honoring suffragettes. What did that moment mean to you to be there, to stand up in that moment?
Well, I think it's a pretty incredible time to be here, the 100th anniversary of women getting the right to vote. I'm glad that he acknowledged that. I really am. I think that there's an irony in it that a big part of the reason that many of us were running in the first place and were elected was in a response to his election. Mm-hmm. But I still think that it's good that he acknowledged it. And I think that hopefully this is a big part of the awakening that needed to happen, where women are moving more and more towards having true equality, starting with equal representation.
The biggest fight we've seen so far is over the border wall. We've seen a government shutdown over that. Speaker Pelosi has called the idea of a border wall immoral. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think what she's referring to there is the symbol that it creates and the way that it's been messaged and so much of the rhetoric around, you know, how immigrants are criminals.
But rich people have walls. There's walls outside the Capitol. There's wall outside the studio. How is a wall,
right,
as a concept immoral?
Well, I think that, right, that's the point, is that I don't see a physical anything in and of itself as immoral. But when you're trying to use it to exhibit a value, then that's when it can be.
Will you support border wall funding of any kind?
Well, I think there's this hang up over the word the wall. And to be honest with you, I think we're going to end up with some barrier funding. It's going to be dependent on, you know, what this committee, this conference committee comes up with between the appropriators of, you know, exactly what that looks like. But I think there is going to be some barrier funding, and one side is going to be able to say it's a wall. The other side is going to be able to say it's not a wall. But the reality is that, you know, barriers in and of themselves in certain places where it makes sense, I don't have a problem with, but I do think that it needs to come with additional funding for people to be able to move through the asylum programs, to actually be able to be humane and deal with the immigration problems that I think are really legitimate.
A week from tonight, is the government going to be shut down?
I honestly don't believe it is going to be shut down. I think that the appropriators have a lot of work ahead of them. I think that the country is not at all going to be okay with the shutdown happening again.
You've become perhaps the most high-profile member of the freshman class, except for one person. Of course, we're talking about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York, getting a lot of attention for this proposal of a 70% tax on people making over $10 million. Is that a good idea?
So you hear the 70% tax on people making over $10 million, but where we kind of miss a phrase to that is that it's only on that 10 millionth dollar and above. So it's not taxing you on everything else that comes before that at that rate. So it's, you know, it's called a marginal tax rate. And I think that there has to be a lot more public education around it. I do think that talking about a 70% tax rate just generally scares a lot of people. And even though the reality is that would never apply to the vast, vast, vast majority of people. But I would rather really focus on, you know, tax measures that I think can make a real difference in generating the revenue that we need to see, and on giving, you know, making taxation easier for the middle class.
So let's talk about presidential politics for a while. 2020, already talking about that.
Yes.
You've already endorsed Senator Kamala Harris, even though all the other candidates haven't declared yet. We haven't had any debates. Why endorse her so early?
Well, listen, I think we've known for a very long time who are potential contenders in this field. And I know many of them. I have a tremendous amount of respect for them. And I believe that Kamala Harris is the right person at this moment in our nation's history. One of the things that drives me nuts is when there's this whole courting process of like, oh, I don't know who I want to support. When it's like, no, I'm going to end up supporting her. I'm just going to say it now, and we can all move on.
So if Vice President Biden throws his hat in the ring in a couple months, you're sticking with Senator Harris?
Yeah, I think that this is an important moment for a woman of color, someone who has the experience that she does, someone who I think is able to mobilize a progressive base, but who also is able to speak to, you know, the issues from a stance of law enforcement and of, you know, justice and security.
So last question, Congresswoman, what is the most fun part about being a member of Congress?
The most fun part? I think the most fun part, and I don't know if this is always the case, but the most fun part for me is the people I work with. We have an incredible class, and I can't overstate that. And what we have is a change in generations, right? And what we are is kind of the tip of the spear in that front. And they're also just really fun people that I can, you know, can say that I'm becoming really good friends with, and I can easily predict that we'll be lifelong friends, whether I stay here or not.
And you even got a roommate who's a fellow member of Congress. You're doing this to help save the rent money.
Yes, that is accurate.
How's that going?
She's so cool. we're really good friends, and it's really nice to be able to come back home and commiserate over the day and just kind of sometimes just be in awe of the circumstances that we're in and how, you know, the responsibility and I think just processing this strange life that we suddenly lead.
I can only imagine what a difference a year makes. Congresswoman
Absolutely.
Katie Hill, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Good to talk to you.
All right, that's Katie Hill. Up next, a lot to talk about with our panel. We got a great one, Assemblyman Travis Allen, former Assemblyman Mike Gatto, and Deborah Cobalt in between. The Issue is coming right back. Well, years ago, Busta Rhymes said, make it clap. But this week, Speaker Nancy Pelosi turned that into a meme. Here is that now iconic photo taken by the New York Times photographer as President Trump delivers his first State of the Union address to a divided Congress and his first with a Democratic speaker behind him. Welcome back to The Issue. I'm Alex Michelson here to talk about the State of the Union. A whole lot more is our panel this week. Travis Allen, currently running to become the chairman of the California Republican Party. Last year, he ran a spirited primary race for governor from 2012 to 2018. He represented Huntington Beach and much of Orange County in the California Assembly. Journalist Deborah Cobalt is a familiar face here on The Issue Is. One magazine profile described her as more driven than Donald Trump. For proof, watch her podcast, Deborah Cobalt Live, including her interview there with her husband, John, KFI, another friend of the show. And Mike Gatto, former California State Assemblyman, currently with the law firm he co-founded called Actium LLP during his time in Sacramento. Mike represented an area from Burbank to Glendale to Silver Lake, became known as a voice for fiscal reform. Mike, welcome for the first time. Welcome back to you both. A little left,
good
right, and center
here
tonight.
Yeah, always the center for
yeah.
me.
All right, so let's talk about that State of the Union. Let's begin with this. Lance Morrow wrote this in the Wall Street Journal. Quote, Donald Trump's State of the Union address was a masterpiece for his purposes. Two chaotic years into his term, Mr. Trump appeared presidential for seemingly the first time, dramatically advanced his chances for re-election in 2012. So, Mike Gatto, do you agree with that?
I do. You know, I think both parties have gone a little crazy since the election of Donald Trump, and it's very difficult for a Democrat to say anything praising the president. But let's be honest, this was a masterful speech. He said things that there were some Democrats would agree with, for example, his call to end our overseas engagements and wars. And both parties right now suffer from a little bit of a Goldilocks problem. The Republicans are probably thinking too small, Democrats might be thinking too big, and the public is saying, guys, work together to get something just right.
But you know, the counter to that, Deborah, is what Katie Hill said. She said, I like parts of the speech, but the divisive rhetoric on immigration and other things, what do you make of that?
I think it all depends upon who you ask, right? I mean, I had to force myself to sit down and listen to the speech, and as a journalist friend of mine said, it was like different speeches being put together into one. You know, depending, you know, the women, I think he brought up issues about women getting hired. He brought up issues about unemployment. He brought up issues about women in Congress. So I think that resonated well on both sides of the pond. So overall, I'm mixed.
All right. And I know you're a fan of the president.
Look, I got to tell you, I think this is one of the greatest speeches delivered by a sitting Republican president since Ronald Reagan. Hmm. Everything was in this speech. I mean, it was all about his success in the last 2 years. And the success is undeniable. Best economy we've seen in decades, with the lowest unemployment in 50 years, rising real wage gains. And every single ethnic group, we now have, you know, record unemployment. And then you take a look at record employment. We have, you know, renegotiated trade deals. We have work on our military. This speech really defined the Trump presidency. And I got to tell you, 2020 is looking pretty good right now.
But let's talk for a moment. He also mentioned this partisan investigation, suggesting
yes.
that if we have more partisan investigations, there's going to be potentially war and problems with the economy. I mean, what isn't that kind of go against the whole idea of what Congress is about? Isn't Congress supposed to be a check and balance?
Well, you know, it is a check and balance. But this witch hunt that's going on in D.C., I mean, there's been zero real proof of any Russia collusion in the Trump campaign. And this is the problem. I mean, even just today as we were walking in the studio, I was hearing yet another, you know, story about how they're investigating the president. It's been 2 years. They found nothing on the president. It's about time to get on with the business of running the country.
Last word, Mike.
Well, I'll tell you, so as much as I think that it was a mechanically powerful speech, I disagreed with a lot of the substance, and I thought it was very divisive. But I am concerned about this culture of investigations we have. I remember that there's a lot of Republicans reacting to the Nixon investigation who investigated Clinton, and these things tend to go in cycles, and I'm kind of concerned with the gridlock that they could pose.
All right, well, before we go to break, we want to take a moment to honor a life of America's longest serving congressman. John Dingell of Michigan died this week at 92. The Democrat was instrumental in so many eras of American history, including passing the Civil Rights Act back in the 60s, and more recently, Obamacare. Our thoughts are with his family as they celebrate a life well lived. Up next, let's talk about some California politics. So they got big players in California politics with us, right? The Republicans absolutely devastated in November. Travis Allen says he can turn things around. He's the man for the job. Up next, we'll debate his plan to do that when we come back.
Let's do it.
Yeah, so you're ready for that, right? Speaking of California dreaming, Republicans are dreaming of winning a statewide election in California. It's been a while. Democrats now control both U.S. Senate seats, both state houses with supermajorities, and every statewide elected office. So how do Republicans win again? Can they? Back with our panel, former Democratic Assemblyman Mike Gatto, podcaster Deborah Cobalt, former Republican Assemblyman Travis Allen. Travis, you are running for party chair. You say you have a plan to turn this around. What's that plan?
It's very direct. It's very simple. The Republican Party has to start registering more Republican voters again in the state. We have not done that for over a decade. We must do what the Democrats have done so well in California, which is community organizing. That means a Republican street captain on every street, a precinct captain on every precinct, a Republican representative in every school, high school, church, university, so actually we can get this message of common sense solutions to California problems across the state. That's number one. The second thing is we need to get rid of this election fraud and all of the nonsense that we've seen in California elections. This goes far beyond ballot harvesting. We're talking about the California DMV illegally registering 25,000 people to vote last year alone that they admitted to, including non-citizens. The Republican Party has been silent on this issue. We basically have to attack this in federal court to make sure that every single vote counts. And that matters whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. You want to make sure that your vote counts and we don't have fraud in our system.
But substantively, your basic point is like the Republican Party needs to be more Republican, right? That we've had what you view as like fake Republicans running.
Well, you know, part of the problem with the Republican establishment is that they have told Republicans for years now that they need to sound and look more like the California Democrats. They need to be essentially Republican light. I believe very clearly the Republican Party has to stand for its values, its ideals, and even support its Republican president. This is the essence of why we have 5 million California Republicans, more than any other state in the union. Right here in L.A., we have 1 million Republicans in this county, which is more than any other county across the country.
We also have more people in this state than any other state in the union. Mike Gatto, you've been there. You've seen both sides. You've been in the Democratic caucus. I know you're frustrated sometimes with the Democratic caucus. Where do you see this?
The Republican Party is like a house perched on a beach cliff. Right? The tide you can think of is turnout. And there's some years where turnout favors Democrats and other years it favors Republicans. And in those years you say, crap, the house is going to fall down. And in other years you say, oh, what a beautiful house. The problem is right now is Donald Trump. He is so revolting to the average American, to the average Californian, that his brand is hurting the Republican Party. And you now have a state where independents outnumber Republicans in the state of California. So it's a very, very tall order that they've got to resuscitate party. But you need an adversarial system in California. You need two sides to debate and talk like this so that the public can decide which issues should survive.
And you say right now it's basically Democrat versus Democrat, like Hillary people versus Bernie people, and that's what's happening. Republicans aren't even a part of the debate. Deborah, you voted for both sides. You voted for Republicans.
I voted for both sides.
How do you feel about the Republican Party right now?
Right now, I agree with you. Donald Trump has made it very difficult for Republicans. And right now, I think you guys are buried 6 feet under. You got a lot of work to do. And I think people right now just aren't trusting what the Republicans say. So look what happened in Orange County. Look what happened with Cox. Where was he?
Worst Republican election in 40 years at the top of the ticket.
And I think people don't forget that.
Well, in all fairness and all respect to you, and I like you, especially because you come on
this
show. If your thought process was right, why didn't you win?
Well, very simply, the president, I was known as California's Trump, right? Yeah. And I was the guy that supported Trump. Unfortunately, due to a political deal of sorts, the president endorsed the never-Trumper in the race, John Cox. And, he went on to lose the worst election result at the top of the ticket since 1978. And this is a big problem for the Republican Party. We also lost half of our congressional seats in California. But it's mechanical as much as it is ideological. The mechanics are we have not registered voters for over a decade. We have not done the community organizing to actually organize the precincts. And then when you take a look at it, In California Republican politics, there are Republicans that didn't even turn out to vote because the California Republican Party didn't stand up for our values and our president.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. A reminder that all of our past and future episodes are available in podcast form, including past interviews with Travis Allen. Just search for The Issue Is wherever you stream. Please subscribe and comment on that. And when we come back, speaking of closing time, is the federal government going to be closed again next week? Our panel with insights on the possible government shutdown. Stay with us. Does song bring it back?
Yeah.
Okay, so have you heard the interview with a singer who says that the song is about childbirth?
As we look into downtown LA tonight, we're listening to Kendrick Lamar's All the Stars. Kendrick is the most nominated artist at the Grammy Awards, which returned to Staples Center this weekend. Back with our panel. This week, we could see another government shutdown. The question is, will we? Deborah.
No, because it would be grossly irresponsible.
Weathercaster forecasts more gridlock in American politics.
I believe there's going to be another shutdown. Very simply, Trump has promised to deliver border security. I think he's going to do it.
All right, we'll see. Let's hope not. As we say goodnight, we're going to hear a little Big Boy. His Maroon 5's performance at this week's Super Bowl was panned, but most everyone seemed to like The Way You Move. Right? I'm Alex Michelson. Have a good night and a great weekend. That was a fun show, and anytime you can end with some Outkast, I'm in a good mood. Thanks so much for watching. Please subscribe to our podcast here at The Issue Is. Leave comments. Let other people know. Watch us 10:30 at night on Fox 11. Follow me on social media at Alex Michelson. Thanks so much. Have a great week.